Yes, I'll start the recording now.
So the first item on the agenda is simply the confirmation of the approval of the minutes and actions. Can we take it that the minutes are, we can confirm that the minutes are approved, have been already. Hi, did someone just join?
I did. It's
that was me. Oh.
No, it was Dottie.
Okay.
Hi, Dottie.
Hi, how are you?
So then it's the action items. Gabby, do you want to take us through the action items?
I'm sorry, what did you say? Sorry.
I want to take us through the action items.
Sure. Action 3201. Bart Bosswinkle to ask Kim Davies to join the next council call.
Done.
Speak on vulnerability. That has obviously been done. Bart Bosswinkle to ask Kim Davies to join the CCNSO meeting in Cairo to speak on vulnerability. I guess that's been done too. Action 3203, the CCNSO secretary to write a briefing paper on the current status of the NSSEC in the route. I've sent that to you last week. And then action 3204, Keith Drazik to cooperate with the CCNSO secretariat in finding speakers on vulnerability for the Cairo meeting. I believe that's been done as well. Action 3205, the CCNSO secretary to come up with a draft program on vulnerability for Cairo within the next days.
That needs to be done.
Okay. Action 3206, the CCNSO secretary to draft a letter according to the bylaws for the establishment of the GNSO observership. That was sent to you yesterday.
Yeah.
Action 3207, the CCNSO Secretariat to contact the GNSO Secretariat in order to find out whether Monday is possible for future CCNSO-GNSO Council meetings. I've done that, but as I understand it, there might be no meeting going on.
Well, yeah,
it depends on
whether we do this big thing, but yeah, okay.
Okay. And then Action 3208, the CCNSO Secretariat to contact Donna Austin to find out what the GAC wants in respect to the number of liaisons. I've done that, but have no clear reply yet.
Okay.
Action 3209, the chair to ask Olivier Guillard to send out an explanatory note on the IANA software testing to the council prior to the next council call.
Yes, I did do that, but Olivier was on holiday.
He sent out something today.
Yeah, a brief note, but Kim will go through that with us.
Okay. Action 3210, the secretary to amend the working group list so that it does not include the joint CCNSO GAC ADN working group any longer. I've done that. Action 3211, Bart Bosswinkle to write the first draft on how to deliver input into ICANN's strategic and operational processes. Bart, have you done that?
ICANN side of it. Next step is a draft, say, again in the format of a guideline. Needs to be discussed with the processing working group.
Okay. Yeah.
Next action item is 3212, the CCNSO secretary to come up with a suggestion on what shape the discussion on anti-phishing shall have in Cairo. I've sent that to you as well, and I haven't had any negative comments so far, so I guess that's okay. And then Action 3213, the chair to send a note to Steve Crocker and Dave Piscatello to ask for the SDAC position on domain name front running.
Which I did, and there was a reply, wasn't there? But I can't find it. So I think I asked, did I ask you if you had it, Gabby?
No.
Chris, are we supposed to be hearing you?
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So yes, you are supposed to be hearing me.
Okay.
I did send a note to Steve Crocker, and he actually sent me a response, but I can't find it at the moment. And I think Gabby, I may have sent it to you, but I'll have a look for it. They didn't say anything very exciting; just said we're still thinking about it. But I'll find it and send it out to everybody. Apologies for that.
Okay, and then the last action point, which was Bart Bosswinkle to contact Patrick Jones and Roloff Meyer in order to set up a fallover session during the Cairo meeting.
Done.
Okay, that's good. It.
Okay, so unless there are any comments on the action items, we'll move on.
This is Hiro.
Yes, Hiro.
Yes, sorry I couldn't join the previous call, but There seems to be four instances of the word vulnerability. Is this about the recent community attack vulnerability or the vulnerability in general?
No, it was about the recent.
Can you say, hold on a minute, I didn't understand that either. The recent what?
Well, the recent, ICANN put out an announcement last month about a vulnerability in the DNS.
Yes. Okay. But it's not to Life and Limb in Cairo.
No.
All right, okay.
just if we could just go back for a second, Bart has very kindly found my response. The response from Steve Crocker, which I will send out to everybody, but it says, my note says, the subject of front-running has been and continues to be discussed by the CCNSO, you know, what's the latest, and he says, we have a very quiet study in progress on possible mode of front-running. We are not describing it at this point. When we have results, we will make them available. We hope to have results by Cairo, but it's not yet certain.
Okay.
So it's now less quiet. I've now told everybody about.
Can we start calling that DNS vulnerability instead of just vulnerability?
Yes, good idea.
Okay.
Yeah. Hero, did you want to carry on about that, or did that answer your question?
Yes, this is Hero again.
Yeah.
And for the Action 3202, actually, I asked Shinta from .jp to speak about the anti-phishing. To speak about the DNS vulnerability in anti-phishing session.
Okay.
Which may be a useful question.
Okay, that's fine.
All right?
Yeah. Anything else? Okay, so the second item, what I'd like to suggest that we do, given that we've got Kim on the call, that item number two on the agenda, which is DNSSEC, and item number five on the agenda, or a bit of item number five, which is the ANA working group, including software testing update, that we actually deal with those now, and then Kim can go off and have breakfast or whatever. Are you in LA, Kim?
I am, but just recently returned. I'm still mentally on European time.
So can we start then with the DNSSEC, two things, the DNS vulnerability and DNSSEC in the root. Kim, is there anything you want to say about the DNS vulnerability thing?
Sure. I don't know if you want me to just briefly explain what it is, but I will be giving a presentation on that at the Centre meeting in a few weeks and also at the CCNSO. But I think in the technical community we've all known that the DNS is somewhat insecure, and that's really why DNSSEC was developed starting over 10 years ago. What wasn't commonly known or known at all is that there are some techniques that can be used that are really very easy to compromise the DNS, and this is what's been known as the Kaminsky vulnerability. These techniques allow you to compromise a DNS server in a matter of seconds. This was obviously a great concern and resulted in a lot of action by a lot of people very swiftly over the last few months. What's of particular interest to TLD managers is that if you share recursive name service on your authoritative name service with your TLD, if you get compromised by this type of attack, it can actually affect the contents of your top-level domain. Once this is recognized, and once this easy-to-use vulnerability was discovered, we scanned all the top-level domain operators for this vulnerability and found that 72 were vulnerable to this type of compromise. There wasn't actually a word for it, so we basically called it a cross-pollination attack, where you use the Kaminsky vulnerability to insert incorrect data to a particular name server, and then that sort of crosses over into the authoritative name server data for a particular domain. Initially, we contacted all the 72 top-level domain operators and said, here's the issue, you need to fix it very quickly. We're happy to help wherever we can. Initially, probably 10 or 20 TLD operators immediately understood the issue and rectified it within a matter of hours or a couple of days. But then we needed to start being much more proactive, reaching out to the remaining 50 or so. This involved us contacting them repeatedly, often speaking with them on the phone, hand-holding them through reconfiguring their servers, explaining in great detail what the actual issue was. For a number of them, they didn't even operate their own name servers, so we had to speak with third parties that were responsible for their name servers. As a result, some actually asked that they were able to sort of test their name servers over and over again until they know that it was correct, rather than contacting me to do that so I could rerun my little test tool. It was converted into a web application that we made public. I think you might have heard about it. It was in an ICANN press release. And this allows not only top-level domain operators to review whether their domain is vulnerable to this type of attack, but also any domain. It's not specific to top-level domains that you have this kind of cross-pollination issue, but top-level domains are definitely the juiciest target for it, so it's definitely of greatest concern to us. So with that outreach effort, which was still ongoing, but was most active for about a month after the announcement of the vulnerability, we reduced the number of vulnerable top-level domains from 72 to, I think, it's down to about 10 or 15 now. Those 10 or 15 are the ones that we've had the least success in contacting, or that do not have any control whatsoever of their name servers and they're not in a position to immediately change them. So we're still working, and our ultimate goal was to reduce that down to zero. More long term, it was already speculated that in our new technical check procedure for the group zone management that recursive name servers for top level domains would be prohibited. This is before the Kaminsky attack was even identified. I think now, in light of this, that's almost certain that that will be a new requirement, that we will check for this recursion, and if it's present on a name server, we won't accept it as a new name server in the root. So that's the brief summary of the vulnerability. The longer term solution to the vulnerability is relatively clear. The vulnerability itself is a design flaw in the DNS, and whilst you can patch for it, it's really making the attack harder, but it doesn't actually fix the attack. The attack before patching can be executed in a matter of seconds, but even with the patch, the attack can be executed in a matter of hours. And with a domain like a top-level domain, no one would argue that for certain high-profile domains, even if executing an attack took hours, it would still be interesting for an attacker to execute the attack. If you can subvert, just as a hypothetical example, google.com to point to a different location, then even if the attack took hours, it's certainly of interest to an attacker. So because the DNS has no security inherently built in, the long-term solution is to introduce security to the DNS, and hence DNSSEC. So this particular vulnerability has given greater interest to DNSSEC in some circles. ICANN itself, as you know, has been interested in implementing DNSSEC for quite some time. We've been running a DNSSEC testbed for over a year now. We're currently in a position where we have asked the U.S. Department of Commerce for permission to sign the root zone. We've put together a specific proposal that we intend to make public in the near future. But basically, it's basically agreed that the DSC would need to sign off on any such proposal. So we've put together a proposal. It was sent to them, I believe, last week. I don't think we've heard back from them yet, but that's really where we are with DNSSEC for the root zone. We're keen to get moving on actual deployment of a signed root.
Can I just ask you a question?
Sure.
Going back to what you were saying about the patch reduces, means it's harder. If you don't have an open recursive server, is it still a vulnerability?
Not this type of attack, no.
The patch you're talking about is a patch that enables you to continue to have to run an open recursive server.
Right. So it makes an attack against an open recursive server more difficult. But when I say you're... Sorry, when
I'm
sorry
interrupting. Yeah.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm sorry interrupting you. We made several tests on that, and if there is good consolation in the network, we are still able to attack a recursive server in 8 hours approximately. So it makes the attack harder. It makes it longer for time of attacker. But anyway, the recursive DNS servers are still vulnerable. So the issue is not solved. It's just the patch just makes the attack more complicated and more time consuming for the attacker. But that's all.
Okay.
I mean, I guess to clarify what I mean by your dimension vulnerable is that if .au, for example, has no recursive name service for its authorities, which I don't believe it does, those name servers themselves are not vulnerable to cache poisoning. But if, let's say, a major ISP in Australia hasn't patched them, the .au domain can be affected because the ISP's name servers have been attacked. So whilst it's not your name servers that are responsible, it could be that, for example, a major ISP has incorrect records for .au because this attack has been successfully executed. So it does. This is why there's such an outreach effort to ISPs and network operators, because the only sort of solution in the long term is to have all name servers updated, not just the authorities for a particular domain.
Okay. Tim, could I just ask about this proposal for ICANN to sign the route, where you said in true politician style, in the near future.
Right.
Is in the near future days, weeks, months? Could we have any estimate of the timescale for that proposal to be public?
I believe it's in the order of magnitude of weeks, but I believe that, I mean, we're very open about this, but I believe we need permission from the Department of Commerce to actually release.
Is Keith Dreisig on the call?
Yeah.
Is Keith Dreisig on the call?
Yes, I'm on.
What do you know about this? I mean, is this something you're involved in with them?
I'm not involved with them. We have had conversations with the Department of Commerce trying to help them get better educated about DNSSEC and all the puts and takes. I think the Department of Commerce is actively looking to, basically be in a position to review the proposal from ICANN and to act on it very quickly. But beyond that, I'm not involved with them, you know, in their deliberations.
Okay. Can I tell you that that my understanding, and I want to stress that this is not in any way official at all. It's just what I've been told by a couple of people, is that the issue may take a little longer because the current position of the department is that they believe that this sort of thing is effectively the same as a review of the current IANA contract, and that they are currently unclear as to how they're going to deal with that, as to whether or not they would have to go to some sort of full-blown review of the arrangements between IANA and the DOC in order for any sort of route signing to be implemented. I'm not saying that that's definitely the case, but that's what I've been told.
I think another factor that's worth mentioning for those that aren't aware is that the current U.S. administration is coming to an end, and based on previous experience, that they're unlikely to make substantive decisions in the remaining months. So it might very well be that we don't get an answer until next year when things are more certain. That's certainly something that is perhaps a concern, given that this is trying to address an active security issue. So we're trying to impress upon the urgency to address this issue, but it's something that's somewhat out of our hands.
We support the urgency to address the issue, Kim, but we were fully aware about the political situation. We thought it was our election for all the attention it's getting in the press.
So I'm actually a bit out of the loop with regards to any specific progress since it was sent. It was sent, I believe, just prior to me going to Europe, and I haven't spoken with my colleague, Rick Lamb.
When did you go to Europe?
A couple of weeks ago.
Okay.
The letter that Paul sent to Meredith Baker is actually on the website. But the letter that's on the website is a letter that says, I'm going to send you a letter.
Right. There's been a subsequent letter that says, here is the letter, I promise, and here is the proposal attached. And like I said, they'll be made public, but I believe we need their approval to do so. So if I know more, I can drop a note to the City NFO Council mailing list, certainly, and I'll speak with my colleague that's responsible for the BNSF project in a matter of hours.
Could you, maybe not everybody's not interested in this, but could you describe the kind of attack, describe the approach of the attack on an open recursive server? What form does it take and what exactly happens?
Sure. The basic, just to briefly summarize how the DNS works, every time you make a DNS query, it sends a packet of information to a server that knows the answer. That server then sends a packet of information back to the original machine that asked the question with the answer. And the way that the computer that asked the question knows that the answer is valid, it looks for certain information in the header that matches. It checks, mm-hmm. is the question being answered the same? Checks, is a number called a transaction ID, is that the same? It checks if the port number that the question came from matches where the answer is being sent to, and a few other bits of information. Now, what the Kaminsky vulnerability identified is that it's very easy to send, well, there's a technique that can be used to send lots and lots of different answers very quickly, so that you can send all the different combinations of those different variables so that at least one should be successful. Another thing that was discovered is that the port number, which is one of those variables I mentioned, on most software, at least until a few months ago, was not changing at all. It was always the exact same number. So you didn't even need to guess what the port number was. You could always use the same port number and find it would always work. So what the patches do is they randomize the port number so that instead of having one number to guess, there's about 60,000 different possible numbers. So that increases the randomization a little. So if someone successfully patched, they need to do 60,000 different combinations. But as Andre mentioned a few minutes ago, it's still viable to do an attack like this in a matter of hours, so it doesn't take a matter of seconds as previously without the patching. So really, the attack and cache poisoning attacks in general is all about someone forging answers back to a computer and doing enough different combinations that statistically they're very likely to hit upon the right combination at some point. And once the invalid answer is received, but the computer that asked the question trusts it, it will then store it in its cache, and then in future lookups, it will keep going to the wrong answer. So that's really.
So what does it do? Interrupt the query, or just make up a bunch of answers and send them?
It makes up it doesn't make up the answers. It probably has a direct destination in mind. So what it does is, let's say I wanted to point google.com to the wrong location. I would send an answer that has that wrong location I want to send it to in the answer. But then in the headers of the answer, I would then do every different combination of what the possible port number is, what the possible transaction number is, and so forth. And I'd bombard the computer with all those different combinations very quickly.
So is that without it receiving a query?
It is. I mean, it's possible to send it without a query, but because these are open recursive servers, I mean, the attacker can actually trigger the query in the first place because they're open.
Oh, okay.
So the attacker first sends a question through the original client to ask the question that it wants to answer, and then it sends all the answers straight after that. And, you know, if the main server, the correct main server, gives the answer faster than the attacker, then the attack won't work, but if they're planning to do the attack and execute it very quickly, then it's very likely that the attacked machine will get the wrong answers before it gets the right answer.
Okay.
Now, I don't think the recursive server has to be just open, because there are various techniques that the attacker use to force the recursive server to make queries, for example using SMTP protocol and such things. So there are more possibilities to attack not just the open recursive server but all recursive server. It's more theoretical, but it's possible still.
Right.
We need to, Kim. You're going to sort of talk about this in presumably in some detail at the DC meeting.
I will, and with any luck, you'll understand what I say.
Well, I mean, my understanding is that basically what it means is that effectively I could end up doing my banking on a site that's not my bank.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right.
But, I mean, the key thing for TLD operators is actually under your direct control. You simply do not use recursive name servers for your authority.
But that doesn't help with ISPs who, for reasons that they've known to themselves, insist on using open recursive servers.
Right, and that's why in our press release a few weeks ago we urged anyone, but TLD operators in particular probably want to do some outreach in their local communities to make sure ISPs are aware of the issue.
And DNSSEC is seen to solve this problem.
Well, it will solve it if it has universal adoption. I mean, even if we sign the route tomorrow, the only people that will be saved is people that have DNSSEC support on their server, on their computer, and that are contacting signed domains. It won't solve it for everyone else. So it's the first step in a long process, but obviously it's the prerequisite to start proper DNSSEC adoption to find the route. So until we have that done, no one's going to even try.
Okay. Can we move on now to the next bit? Everyone,
yep.
Any more questions? Okay, Kim, the next bit's the IANA testbed scenario. We had at the council, basically, I mean, the council meeting in Paris. Olivier delivered a brief report on the status of the IANA testbed, which he basically said was closed.
Mm-hmm.
He sent a note out today as well, I think, to the list. But what we would like is for you to actually tell us the situation and explain what happened.
Okay. Because it's been a little while and I don't remember exactly what was discussed back and forth during Paris, I'm probably just going to start by reading a note that I sent to Chris directly after the two signature council meeting once I'd heard about what was discussed, and hopefully that will for the most part answer your questions, but here I go. I understand at the CCNSO council meeting yesterday there was a concern that IANA had stopped testing of our root zone development software that is currently under development. I wish to assure you that this is not the case, and I hope to clarify this. As an ongoing project, work is being conducted with IANA to help optimize the workflow of root zone management requests we process. As part of this program, software that will help shepherd these requests along the process. I have received a lot of concerned comments regarding the discussion, which I was unable to be present at the CCNSO council meeting. However, I believe that there may be some confusion on some aspects of the program that I'd like to address. As part of the development program, we invited security operators to participate in using an early version of the software. This was announced in San Juan, and we accepted and implemented tester accounts at the Los Angeles meeting. It was hoped that this would provide feedback on the interface to help guide our development, as well as allow TLD operators to experiment with the system using fake data. Development of the system has continued since that time, and in the assessment of our software developers and partners in the project, it was felt that it's appropriate to move to a more structured test program involving real data and real requests, as opposed to the fake data that we've been using. Note that this is not placing it in production, but it's rather moving the software into a mode that would allow evaluation using the real requests that we receive and ensuring that the system works exactly the same way that root zone management works today. In order to accomplish this, the testing environment needed to be reset, the software needed to be updated to more recent software, and it needed to be retooled to match the existing data in the root zone database. This test platform was being used by the TLD volunteers. It was based on data that was 6 months old at the time of the Paris meeting, and it had been heavily modified to allow testing by the testers without impacting non-testers. For example, if you change the glue record for a main server that was shared amongst multiple TLDs, we didn't want TLDs that were not part of the testing program to have to confirm those requests. So that's the kind of modification that had been done. After we reviewed the usage of the system, we determined that almost all the testers had not logged into the system for several months. Those that had logged into it in the previous month or so, we contacted directly and asked them to participate further in the active testing moving forward, and they were happy with us to migrate the system over to the next step of testing. I think there was an impression during the Paris meeting that resetting the test environment in this way was somehow us finishing the testing and implying that we were ready to deploy the software, and that's not really the case at all. In fact, we wanted to actually conduct more thorough testing, so we wanted to update the software so it more closely matched what we wanted to deploy. We wanted to have real data in it as opposed to fake data, and we wanted to work on a more structured testing plan that had USDOC approval. So that's really the summary of the situation. I made a few other comments in my email to Chris that weren't really related to this
program. Just so everyone knows what happened, this was in Paris, and I then put Olivier and Kim in a small room, actually the bar, and asked them to sort it out so that there was a clear understanding across both ways what Olivier thought had actually happened and what Kim thought had actually happened, that could come together with one agreement of what actually did happen. And then I asked Olivier to, once he'd had his conversation with Kim, to work on reporting back to the council. But at this stage, that next step hasn't yet happened.
Yeah, so Olivia and I met, and hopefully he's understood what I was saying. In particular, I encouraged him to speak with our lead developer on this project to discuss through how he would like to participate in the testing moving forward. Certainly, it's not our aim to cut off testers that actually want to test the system. The more testing, the better, as far as we're concerned. But move towards the testing program was based upon those that had expressed initial interest in testing had more or less finished doing the testing and were no longer using the system, and it was more appropriate to move to more structured testing where we had a checklist of items that we went through and we did it in a very structured way. I'm not sure if Olivia ended up talking with him. I know Olivia went on holidays for an extended period shortly after, but that's If he hasn't already spoken to him to discuss that, then that opportunity is still open to him. Moving forward, we've done more testing internally on the system, but really at this stage we're waiting for the USDOC to approve our testing program and our deployment strategy. Since Paris, we've had meetings with the Department of Commerce. For those that aren't aware, there's been significant personnel changes at the US Department of Commerce, and this has resulted in some very different information on how they want us to work on this project, and we've had to restructure the way that we were working on to deploy the software. We're actually right now working on a thorough proposal on exactly how the software will be signed off on, and once that's complete, that will be submitted for approval. But as I mentioned, this is quite different from the process we're working on prior to Paris. So we're working as feverishly as we can on that. We've been, I guess, a little sidetracked by like the vulnerability issue and some other things, but that's currently our number one priority.
Can I ask for any questions or comments, please? No.
So I will give a further update at the next meeting, and I expect that we'll have something more substantive to say then. But that's really, I think, at this point, all I can think to say.
Thank you. Unless anybody has anything else for Kim, then I think we can let him go. Does anybody have anything else?
Yeah, I have just more announcement.
Yes, Andre.
We at the CZ signed the zone.cz, so we are moving, and we started the DNS in Czech Republic. I think I will have some presentation about it in Cairo. It's just more announcement for you.
And I can say that Australia is also moving towards an implementation program for DNSSEC. We do have a concern about the root signing situation because it matters to us who signs the root. But we are moving to implementation. Anything else for Kim? Okay, thank you, Kim.
A pleasure. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, bye.
Okay, is everyone all right if we move on to the next item on the agenda? Good. So that's number three, which is approval of the letter on the GNSO observership. I need to send that letter. It just needs a couple of typos corrected, but everybody should have a copy. If everyone's okay with it, I'll send it out later today to Avery. So unless there are any objections. Okay, done. The next item is approval of the resolution on the reconstruction of the CCNSO GAC working group. Gabby, what are we supposed to be doing here?
Well, we can't really do anything because we have no clear reply from the GAC about the numbers of working group members. So we were supposed to approve a resolution, but it turns out last minute we can't.
Well, Yanis will be here in Geneva on Thursday, so I will try and have a chat with him then about it and see where we get to. He has sent me a note asking if we're asking for a CCNSO GAC session on either Tuesday or Wednesday on non-IDN stuff. So clearly they want to continue to meet, but I'll see what I can do when I see him on Thursday. Anyone else got any comments on that?
Maybe the suggestion is to put it on the next CCNSO Council call again.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, that takes us now to number five, which is working group update. We've done the IANA working group. Leslie, do you want to do participation?
Yes, so I've not got a great deal to report, I'm afraid. I've been rather distracted with... Rather busy, yes, that's the word. I've been catching up on the Paris meeting and the report presented to the Paris meeting. In the meantime, Hilda's been trying to finalise the official version of the report, the highlights of which she presented at Paris. That's almost done, and she will then share that with the main group. My reading of the report was that it was great, but it kind of lacks some recommendations. So I very much hope that I can get the main whole group to some conclusions on the recommendations before Cairo. The other bit of work we had was to talk about the sharing of information program. I forget what we're calling it now. The admin workshop.
Yes.
I've not discussed that on the main group, but I have had discussions with several group members, and we seem to have come to the conclusion, although of course we're welcome to other ideas, that there should be some sort of small group of CCNSO participants, whether they be members or otherwise, tasked with coming up with a program, and obviously that will need somebody to lead that. We don't think that's the role of the participation working group, but would very much encourage that to be put in place as one of our recommendations.
Right. So you're intending that the working group will come back to us at some point with a consensus on that and suggest that that's what we do.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think one of the things we're trying to do is not make the participation group go on forever.
Yeah.
It's very much viewed as a sort of intervention to hopefully set some things in track to improve participation more generally.
Okay, excellent. Any questions for Leslie? Nope. Okay, the next one is the processes working group.
As I said, I still need to draft some guidelines on, say, the interfacing between the CCNSO or CCLD managers?
Sorry, Bart, I can hardly hear you. I'm not sure about the others, but could you repeat what you said?
Yeah. I still have to draft guidelines on the interfacing, and that will be discussed with the processing working group first, and then will be presented at the CCNSO meeting. I've been busy, as I told you, going over the action items in getting clarification on how the strategic process and the operational budgeting process or planning process will be run into the next couple of years. We've documented it, so it's now easy to draft the guidelines, so we have back-to-back the guidelines and the internal ICANN strategic and operational planning process.
Okay. Anything else on the...
There's the subject of the funding of travel.
Travel, yeah.
And to me, that's very tough, and I think that I would like to hear more input about the intent of the funding of travel from the rest of you, because while there are a number of issues, the amount of money turns out to be a fair amount of money based on some estimates that I have seen. And so I really don't think that the processes group should be held to make a decision about who doesn't have any money and who does. And it's very hard to know anything about who would otherwise not be able to come, because all of us seem to be able to manage to get there. Without taking too much time, can somebody tell me what they believe the intent of this is?
I'll hold it. Yes, Dottie, we can, I think, but can I just for clarification, it would be the role of the processes working group to actually come up with a process, wouldn't it?
Yes, but then who's going to make the decision? I mean, we're not really in a...
The council can make the decision.
But somebody's got to receive applications, verify monies, you know, that kind of thing. It's an operational thing.
Hold on. Patricia, yeah?
Yeah, that wouldn't necessarily be the processes working group. We would propose a process, and part of that process would define who or what body should evaluate these applications.
Well, yeah. I agree with you, but somebody's going to have to do it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, can I suggest that, I mean, just so that... To answer your question, Dottie, the intent behind it was that ICANN, at least I believe the intent behind it was that ICANN had reached the conclusion that given that they were funding the ALAC attendance, and that the GNSO had for some considerable time been suggesting that funding should be provided for at least some members of the GNSO Council, and that on occasions the GNSO might need to have face-to-face meetings that were not actually at ICANN meetings, and that they should be funded. I think what happened in the end was that Doug and his team went away and thought, well, if we're going to do this, we need to do this for everybody. We can't just do it for one SO or one AC. So they came up with this proposal, and I mean, I think there are all sorts of challenges with it from a logistics point of view, but that's a minor issue really. What we need to do is to try and find an acceptable methodology for us spending the travel budget.
Yeah, but before you decide the methodology, you've got to... Well, I suppose you consider it part of it. You have to identify on what basis you're going to approach who's qualified.
I would agree with you, but I think that's a part of the discussions. that the working group needs to have and to come back to us with some thoughts on that.
Chris?
Yeah.
Yes, but I think Dot is right in asking for some guidance, some orientation from council, I guess, as to what do we expect to do with this money. We can come up with a process for allocating it, but who should benefit from this funding is kind of a political decision. It's not a procedural decision. And I think that we may have, in this first attempt that we did very quickly because we didn't have the time, we may have slightly misunderstood this because we took this as funding to be made available to people in financial hardship, which is one way of looking at it. But on the other hand, we often do not realize that many of the people that attend ICANN meetings do so with funding from ICANN, the board to begin with, and a number of other officials, and the AIDAC, and now the part of the GSO Council, and so on. So it's as a matter of routine, I think, in the organization, it is understood that funding for people that need to be there for the meeting to happen, independently of whether they could afford to go or to pay their own way.
Yes.
Yeah. That's
I understand and I agree. I think the sorts of decisions that need to be made are things like there are a fixed number of people, individuals that could be sponsored per meeting. And it's up to us to decide whether we want that to be limited solely to councillors or whether we would be interested in sponsoring, using it to sponsor speakers, or whether we would be... I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities of what we could do, I suppose. I'm not really sure what the best way forward is.
Well, can I ask this question?
Yes, Dottie.
Do you think the intention of it is to support councillors, or do you think the intention of it is outreach to bring interested parties in the community to come to ICANN?
Okay, the fellowship program is there to
bring interested parties.
My recollection of the document that Doug produced says that it's up to us to decide the use of the funding within the scope of the funding within the CCNSO itself. So just as an example, we could say that we were going to extend the possibility of funding to members. It doesn't just have to be the council. The more I think about it, the more I agree with you and Patricio about the fact that we need some high-level discussions about this before we come up with any sort of methodology.
Right.
May I make a suggestion that processes of working group needs to come together anyway in the next couple of weeks, is that as a first step with regard to these processes, we document some questions to be sent out to the CCNSO Council for further discussion. So we have, what the processes working group needs for guidance, and then we have the discussion with the council, and then the processes working group can go back.
Okay, the thing is, it's going to be pretty quick if we're trying to make something that is going to be voted on at Cairo.
But it's probably not possible with regard to this one.
We can try, but we may have to vote on it on a telephone meeting after Cairo. But I think the starting point is, I think Bart's right, the starting point is for a small group, and it makes sense for it to be the process of the working group at this stage, to actually define the questions that need to be answered, and then we can work out what those answers are. And if it takes time, Dottie, it takes time. That's the way of the world.
Okay. We'll try to structure it so it won't take too much time. But everybody needs to be alert to respond.
Yes, Leslie.
I was just going to make the point that I think there, I mean, perhaps you're doing this in these suggested questions. I hadn't realised the potential scope of this money.
Yeah.
And Chris, when you were just saying just now, you know, some of the options that we could use it for, I hadn't realised that, that there were no boundaries specifically necessarily around it. So it'd be useful to understand that. Then I guess what we need to do is develop some options. Now, maybe that's what you're saying about the questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fine. And I think in the preparatory note, it is to line up both the fellowship program and, say, the scope of the financial contribution.
Mm. Yeah.
So there is a clear understanding what is under the fellowship program and what is under this new...
What we'll do is we'll get Bart to do a briefing document to the processes working group that actually summarises what the scope is.
Yeah.
And I'm fairly sure that I read and I had a discussion with Doug about this, that there was mention of the fact that you could use it for speakers. There was certainly mention of the fact that, you know, you didn't have to necessarily be for counsellors, which is why I suggested originally, in my original email, that we could use some of that money to fund Eberhard to come for the Tech Day.
Can I just say something? Because I was on two telephone conferences about this.
Yeah.
And the definition is basically that we should fund anyone who will help the work of the CCNSO.
Yeah.
So it's not a fellowship thing that we just bring someone who will just sit in the meeting. It should be someone who actually actively contributes to the work of the CCNSO.
Thank you.
If that could be a speaker, or that could be a working group chair or whatever, but it should be someone who actually actively helps the work.
Okay.
It feels a bit like a bit of a minefield, though, I think, in terms of the repercussions of those decisions and who's funded this month, etc. I mean, just to pick up on Patricio's point, I agree with you. It shouldn't just be limited to people who've got financial problems.
Yeah.
That was the only quick way I could think of suggesting we deal with it in the meantime till we have criteria and rules suggested.
Yeah, well, most often, if it's based on something like need, there has to be some kind of documentation of the need, and then that gets real involved.
Yeah.
Can I just say this, that I think that the budget, this is my sense of the budget, and I could be wrong, that it would support about a dozen travelers on an annual basis, and three of those would be NomCom appointees, okay? So, but the budget itself is like just under $200,000, works out to about that. So we're talking about a fair amount of money here for just, you know.
But Dottie, you're right. You're kind of right. If you just ignore the NomCom appointees for the moment because they're funded anyway, it's...
But they aren't allocated to us?
No, but for the in addition to the three NomCom appointees already funded,
uh-huh.
Tension is that they would be funding for eight or nine, I can't remember which, spots per meeting,
mm-hmm.
And that includes a flight, hotel, and a per diem.
Right.
And I agree that I think the last thing we want to get into is a sort of series of prove to us that you're worthy of this money. Here's the following documentation.
Yeah.
It may be that the answer is as simple as, you know, if you agree a number of funding spots for councillors out of the nine that's done in rotation. I mean, there are all sorts of possibilities
which
need to be examined. But if we start with a briefing note from Bart, just to sort of do an executive summary, if you like, of the documentation. Bart and Gabby, and then the processes working group has a look at that and comes up with a series of questions. Hopefully, by the time we have our next call, we'll be able to have a more useful discussion.
Right. Yeah, okay.
Chris, would it be helpful if this recent paper would include a summary of all the funding that's already allocated to people, like, for instance, if we decided to fund Eberhard, perhaps that would be a step backwards, because I understand that he's already being funded by ICANN, or
Well, kind of. There was a fixed amount of money. My recollection is, and I'll check this, that there was a fixed amount of money put aside to pay for a number of expenses for Tech Day, but I can't remember whether it was an agreed ongoing budget or not. So we'll double check that, but I agree, we need to cover that as well. Because if that's already covered, and it's going to continue to be covered, then it comes out of the equation. But I suspect that the intention of this particular funding would be to actually corral everything together in one amount.
Yeah, sounds logical.
Okay.
But it would use up a lot of the funding.
What would?
Well,
no, it's quite cheap, really.
Well, at $10,000, it's cheap, but at per capita, it's not cheap.
Yes, true. All right. So can we move on from that one? And Bart and Gabby will prepare a document for the working group. Good.
Thank you.
I
just want to say that it is such an enormous pleasure and help to have Gabby and Bart supporting our working group. It is unbelievably wonderful.
Shall I put that in the minutes?
Absolutely, Gabby. Absolutely. Dottie said, quote.
Well, we better add a statement that says it makes everything progress in so much more depth and in a more timely fashion.
Thank you, Dottie.
Mm-hmm.
Item 7 is the administrative workshop for Cairo, which we've already dealt with in the... the Tech Working Group. I'm not entirely sure that there's anything to say about that except that Eberhard is busy planning his Tech Day for Cairo and putting an agenda together which he'll get out as quickly as he can.
Oh, there's just one thing I would like to say.
Yes,
I think it's with the briefing paper about DNSSEC written by Gabriel who wrote it. Though it's written, then the technical working group has not undertaken any work on the issue. It was named the DNSSEC issue, and that's not absolutely true because we produced a paper about the DNSSEC and the relevance to the root zone. And I'm not sure. Maybe Abhar didn't send it, to you, but it was produced a paper about that. Me and Roy Ahrens worked on that, so it's just, addition to that point and also to the DNSSEC thing.
Andres, thank you. That's my fault because Gabby asked me and I said I didn't think there had been anything. Would you be kind enough to send a copy of that to Gabby? And
sure.
Gabby can amend her document to include that.
Yeah, it was, it was in the beginning after the issue of DNSSEC raised, so it's quite old and it should be updated now, but it reproduced something at least.
Thank you. That would be very useful, Andres. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have anything else to add on the Tech Working Group? Nope. Okay. Sorry, item 7 we've dealt with. Item 8 is the Cairo meeting agenda, which is kind of still in discussion in the sense that we've had some suggestions for other things. Does anybody have any other comments on the current agenda? Apart from the fact that it's going to take us, it's fairly full already. No?
Yes, this is Hiro.
Yes, Hiro.
Yes, I'd like to suggest a change of the agenda.
Yeah.
Since Kaminsky attack vulnerability seems to attract much interest, I think it's better to make this vulnerability session an independent session.
Okay.
Where Kim will give the explanation of what this is all about, as he did in this call.
Yes.
Which is followed by Shinta from .jp, who will talk about the activities by CCTLD registries and CERT in Japan, and then the effect by the effort.
Yeah.
And then someone from Czech, maybe Andre, will talk about the activities and how DNSSEC can contribute to the solution.
Okay, and Hiro, that would mean taking, because you said that you were going to talk about that in which session originally? In the anti-phishing session. So that would be taking that out of the anti-phishing session and running it as a separate session, is that right?
Right, yes.
Okay.
Because
yep.
there's a cash poisoning call
sure.
from .jp, which can be moved to the vulnerability session.
We can run, and if we run the two sessions side by side, you know, one after the other, then that would make sense, wouldn't it?
All right.
Okay, we'll work
okay.
on that.
Chief.
All right.
Yes, I'm here. I heard that, and I
think you heard it as well. Maybe, you know, we'll contact you to include this in the session on DNS vulnerability.
Yes, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. Thank
Chris,
you.
Chris, this is Peter. I have one more. I'm not sure whether this has already been discussed, but it might be interesting to have somebody from the Registry Internet Safety Group speak at the CCNSO meeting as well, but probably Leslie, you can get a better evaluation of that.
The what, sorry, Peter? The
Registry
yeah.
Internet Safety Group.
All right. Yeah.
From what I heard about it, it seems quite interesting to give the CCNSO members an update on that.
Absolutely. I can ask Alexa from .org, who's taking a leading role on that, whether she'd be happy.
Okay, can I just put in a plea for Gabby's sanity, that we just work on what we've currently got before we put anything else in the pot, because we need to make sure we've got time.
This Peter, to understand
yep.
it, this you suggest is as part of the DNS vulnerability session.
Yeah, I don't have the latest version in front of me here of the agenda, but definitely as part of the existing agenda. But when we're talking about phishing and anti-fraud measures, it would seem a lack in
okay.
the
yeah.
material that we're presenting
okay.
if we're not having somebody from that group.
Yeah. Understood. Now that's fine. That makes sense. We can do that. We just have to persuade Rod Rasmussen to not talk for as long as he wants to, but I'm sure that won't be a problem. Okay, so that
I have one more thing for the agenda.
Yes, Gabby.
I wonder, at the last meeting in Paris, it was said that we will invite someone from McAfee to come and say something about the study. Are we still going to do that?
Well, yes, but I think that I'm trying to remember where we got to on it. I think we were trying to. I thought we had, and I thought they said no, but maybe I'm dreaming. Nigel gave me the contact details, and I thought that we'd done something, but let me check.
I have no information on that. I'm not sure. Yeah.
Let me check. Okay. That's where we are with the Cairo meeting. Number 9, with domain name front running, we've dealt with, and it's going to be on the agenda. We'll put it to that. Sorry. So number 9, yeah, we that is on the agenda, isn't it, Gabby? Front running.
I think so.
This is the update on the reply from ASAC on Chair's note, so that's been covered.
Yeah. Okay. Number 10 is the formal appointment of the election manager. For both the council nominations and the for the CCNSO council nominations and elections, the bylaws say that we have to formally appoint an election manager. The guidelines. I'm sorry. Say that we have to formally. See, my mind is the same thing, but guidelines, bylaws. We have to appoint an election manager formally. Obviously, unless anybody has any objections, Gabby would be doing that. Is there any discussion? Okay, so can we, then in that case, Gabby, can we formally appoint you as the election manager, please?
Yeah, sure.
Where are we at the moment? When do nominations close, Gabby?
They close on the 29th, which is in 1.5 weeks, and we still have no candidates.
Oh, well, that's easy. We can just reduce the size of the council, and we all get.
You're gonna have one from North America. I just haven't done it yet.
Okay. fine.
So, sorry, Chris. This is for elections in March next year.
No, the elections will be no. At the end of the new councillors take their seats in at the first meeting of next year.
Oh, okay. I thought they were through till June.
No.
No.
No, it's
where
the election takes the existing councillors sit in Cairo, and the new councillors formally take their seats in Mexico. But we need to know who they are before then, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
So Gabby's actually done a timetable for this, and Gabby, can you, roughly speaking, if we get more than one nomination per region, when would the election be?
If we get more than one candidate, then we would have to start an election process, and that would start on the 13th of October, and the results would be announced on the 10th of November, and if there would be a tie, we will have the results by the 1st of December latest.
Okay.
This is why we started so early, because we never know if there will be elections, if there will be a tie,
early.
And so on.
We started early because our new CCNSO guidelines set a time frame, which we've, up until now, we've kind of left it until after the last meeting of the year to do, but the new guidelines meant that we started it earlier than we have previously. Is that right?
Yes, that's right as well.
Good. So,
and also the second thing is that we will have to start an election process to the board in Cairo, and not to confuse the two processes. We started this earlier.
Oh, no, we don't start an election process, we start a nomination.
Sorry, a nomination.
Yeah, so just everybody, so that everybody's clear, Demi's seat on the board is, his term expires in May of next year, and so we need to call for nominations at or just after Cairo and go through whatever process we need to go through to handle that. I don't know whether or not, I mean, we obviously need to, perhaps Gabby should send a reminder out to everybody to say that the nominations for the council close on the 29th.
Yes, I was planning to do that next Monday.
Okay, good. Fine. Excellent. Any other comments on that? Okay. Now, the next item, item 11, is the non-com discussion. Three bits. Appointment of the CCNSO non-com representative. I think we've basically formally now agreed, appointed Margarita as our representative on the non-com. But we just need to note that in the minutes, Gabby.
Yeah.
She will be the first meeting of the new nominating committee takes place just after, at the end of the Cairo meeting, I think. So she will be there for that. That's right, isn't it, Patricia?
Yeah, it's, I think it's the 8th and 9th, immediately
right
after the meeting.
Good. Now, the second item is the current, the non-com's appointment to the CCNSO Council. And I wanted to have a discussion about this. Most of you know that I have had many problems with the nominating committee over the few years that it's existed, and I'm very rarely quiet about it. But I wanted to run past you all my current feelings and to see whether I'm just being particularly difficult or whether there is actually something we should do, because the nominating committee has appointed to the CCNSO Council Jan from CNNIC.
From what, Nick?
Pardon me?
Jan from where?
China.
.cn.
Oh, okay.
Now, I'm sure she'll be a fantastic councillor, and I will tell her that I think that she will be a fantastic councillor. However, it strikes me that this is probably an appointment that is way outside of what the non-com is supposed to do. Because what it does is it undermines the at least my understanding, and I thought everybody's understanding, that the non-com was supposed to add independence to the CCNSO Council and not appoint CCTLD managers. It also has the effect of fundamentally skewing the regional balance, because what we actually now have, by default, is four CCTLD managers in the Asia-Pacific region on the council. And my understanding of the role of the non-com was that it was supposed to appoint independent people who brought a balance and a view outside of CCTLD to, at least to some extent anyway, to the council. I'm less concerned about that than I am concerned about the fact that an actual person who works for a CCTLD manager appointed by the NOMCOM does have a serious effect on the regional balance of CCTLD managers on the council. But I'm also happy to accept that I may just be overly sensitive about all of this stuff, and I would like to hear what other people think.
Chris, I know the people from CNNIC very well, so I think we just need to take that as given for all of us that she'll be excellent on the council.
Yeah.
I share your concerns regarding the non-con appointment sort of being a different route for people from CCs other than the current election process that we've just been discussing.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. What would we do if somebody else from CNNIC nominates for the council in the Asia-Pacific region? Which they're quite entitled to do, because Jian is on the council as a NOMCOM appointee and therefore effectively not as a CCTLD representative.
Have we had any discussions with the NOMCOM regarding this situation?
Well, you won't be surprised to hear.
Can I say something?
That
the Premier has staged demonstrations.
Outside
the meeting room.
I sent a note to Hagen on the announcement was made on Saturday the 6th of September, and on Saturday the 6th of September I sent an email to Hagen saying that, from my own personal point of view, saying that I was very concerned about it, and I listed why I was concerned, which is that, you know, the skewing of the regional balance and so on and so forth, and going way outside of what I thought the NOMCOM was supposed to do. And I flagged that it would be something that I would bring up at the council meeting. Hagen's response was to say, yes, thank you, but we considered all of that before we made the appointment. And my response to that was, well, that makes it worse. Because if you're telling me that you thought about all of this and then just decided to ignore it, then that just makes it worse. And to be fair to Hagen, he then came back to me and said, actually, yes, you're right. and he and I are now, we've agreed that, subject to what the rest of the council thinks, that we should work to ensure that that sort of thing doesn't happen again.
Chris,
I share
can
your
I
concern,
say something?
Chris.
Yeah, sorry, who was that?
This was Slobodan. Can I say something on this?
Of course you can, Slobodan.
Well, given the fact that I was also appointed by the NOMCOM 3 years ago, there was the same problem at that time.
No, there wasn't.
The original balance was...
You weren't CCTLD manager, Slobodan.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about
the time that it was skirting fairly close to the line, but that... Because you weren't actually involved. The fact that you are now is a different issue, but you weren't at the time a CCTLD manager.
I was not referring to that fact. I was referring to the skew of the original balance. And I remember that one of the first reactions of the council was to recommend to the NOMCOM to pay close attention, not to to make decisions that would break the balance again.
Yes, exactly.
So we are now in the same situation, and this concerns me.
Yeah, I agree. There is one other issue which I think I have to mention, and I need to say before I say this that I haven't yet spoken to Jian, and I shall speak to her. And I also haven't yet spoken to Christopher Toe, who is our representative on the NOMCOM, but it strikes me that that is also a slightly challenging area, because the chair of .HK was our representative on the NOMCOM, and frankly, I would have thought that he would have found himself in a very difficult position dealing with a possible appointment to the CCNSO council.
Well, does it have to be a unanimous vote?
No. He may very well not have voted, but, and I mean, hopefully he didn't. But again, I think we need to ensure that our one single representative on the NomCom is fully briefed about what our feelings are about this.
Slobodan,
thank you for reminding me about that, because you are right, and we did actually say something at the time. I think it was George Sadowski was chairing it, I think, at the time.
Yes.
And George was advising Hagen this time around, so he really should have known better.
Chris?
Yes, Dodgy.
I'd like to ask a question and make a comment. Is the NomCom given guidelines about how they're supposed to select?
Yeah, it is my understanding that yes, they are.
But doesn't it turn over every year, every time?
To a degree it does.
So that all the people are new and...
Not all the people are new, but...
But a good amount of people are new.
A certain amount of people are new.
Mm-hmm.
There is no corporate history as such, because each year... Effectively, the all of the documentation is kept, you know, is kept secret for that year.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no corporate history.
Well, it seems as though they need some. We need to establish some documentation.
Well,
at least from us.
I think yes. I mean, my view is that we should if we have consensus on this. My view is that we should formally write to the board. Setting out what we think the role of the NomCom is, and pointing out to them that they appear to have forgotten what their role is.
Well, I think that it should be something that is well thought out and well planned, and at the end shouldn't tell them that they've forgotten what their role is, but should serve as a document that they memorialize.
I agree. I wasn't seriously suggesting.
I know.
To say that. It's a delicate issue, and it needs to be handled properly, because I don't want there to be. It's not fair on Jian, for a start. She needs to know that she's...
To in any way make her feel uncomfortable about it. Yes.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I feel is that, or I think is that. What difference does it make if there's a regional imbalance?
Well, Dottie...
I mean, I know there's supposed to be a regional balance, but, there's so many members on the council now that it's hardly true that anyone could swing an election.
It's a mixture of different things. It should be a principle that if you're going to have a NomCom, and when this was originally discussed, there were lots of people not in favour of having, you know, independent appointments for the council and so on and so forth. But if you're going to have it, it should do what it's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. The regional issue is more to do with, as I said earlier, under the current situation is that we've got a call out for nominations for the council, and it is entirely possible that somebody from .cn could nominate to the council. It's equally entirely possible that somebody from .hk could nominate to the council, and so on. And if you have a circumstance where you've actually already got a CCTLD representative on the council from a CCTLD, that causes major problems.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole basis of the regional structure that we did put in place 5 years ago, or however long ago it was, seems like a lifetime ago, was to try and avoid that happening. Unless anyone has a problem, what I was going to suggest I did was that I drafted something up as a sort of draft letter, setting out what, as you quite rightly said, Dottie, the memorialising, if you like, the what we think the role of the NomCom is in respect to the CCNSO, and send that out to everybody to have a look at and comment on and change.
Yeah. Chris?
If we can agree to send it, great, and if we can't, then we won't. Yes, Hiro?
This is Patricio.
Oh, sorry, Patricio, I apologise.
Yep. I was looking at a document published by the NOMCOM, that's an invitation for a statement of interest and suggestion for candidates. And that document contains a section describing precisely the CCNSO position.
Mm.
Number of seats, one, start of term, blah, blah, blah. And there's a number of eligibility factors and additional considerations, time commitment, and so on. And while I read it, there's a lot of things here about what do they expect from the person. And if you read this, you could even come to the conclusion that the CCTLD manager would be a very good candidate because, for instance, it requires experience or knowledge of CCTLDs and issues of importance to the global internet and so on.
Mm.
So what's not there is something like what you're saying. For instance, that person should not be a CCTLD manager. And one thing we could do is to propose some additions to this document that would make explicit that kind of constraint.
Yeah. I agree. I mean, there are various different documents. There are references to the role of the NOMCOM in the bylaws that talk about independence and you know, bringing wider experience and so on. So, but I agree with you. I think it needs to be a lot clearer. And you know, if I can, over the next sort of week or so, I'll trawl through all the documents, get all the bits and pieces together, and try and lay something out that sets out the position as it should be. And if we can agree it, then we can perhaps send it off. Does that at least as a starting point? Is that okay with everyone? Anybody object? Okay. Well, look, I'll do that, and I'll send something out to the council list in a week or so. And in the meantime, I'll also speak to Jeanne and let her know that, you know, she's welcome, etc. Is that all right?
I think that's a wonderful idea.
Okay, good. And that brings us to the last item on the agenda, which is the attack and disaster planning. No, attack and disaster response thing.
Has that happened yet?
Pardon me?
Has that happened yet?
No. It, Gabby, we got that on there because Don wanted to remind everybody that there was going to be a session in Cairo.
I thought there was one in Europe.
Sorry, Chris. Just sort of interrupting, but you actually dropped one thing, the process for selection of non-com appointee.
Sorry, yes.
Which is, we should probably ask the process working group to come up with a process since there is no process.
Okay, good, done. Excellent. Good idea. Well done.
Thank you.
There's no problem, Bart. Go, have a lovely time. We should have a formal process for that, and I agree. So that would be really good. Thank you, Gabby. Now, why have we got item 12 on the agenda?
Because Don wanted us to.
Chris, this is Peter. I can just share a quick word on that. So the ADRP training session is based on the successful training that APTLD organized in Kuala Lumpur last year. And it's basically based on the request by quite a few CCTLD managers to do something on a more global level, and I can seem to be the perfect partner in that respect. So there is a training session. It's now confirmed that it will be taking place. It's on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So it's a three-day session before the ICANN meeting in Cairo. I think so far we have about 12 to 15 participants. The level that Don and the people that are running the workshop are looking for is technical directors and general managers for CCTLDs. I would be very happy to say that everybody is welcome, but I have no idea whether there's actually a maximum number of participants. But Don is definitely your best bet for all information on that. And people that did participate in Kuala Lumpur told me that it's well worth your time.
Thank you, Peter. We might get Don to send a note out if he hasn't already. I don't recall seeing one to members, but I may have missed it. So we'll get one sent out. Okay. Is there anything else that we need to talk about?
Can you confirm exactly with what the first meeting is in Cairo for the CCs or any part of it?
You mean what day?
Yeah.
Well, the council, you'll recall, or you may not recall, but hopefully you'll recall that we agreed in Delhi after our planning day that we would have a half-day follow-up in Cairo. So we're currently working to organise that for Sunday. The Monday looks like being the half-day joint NSO, CCNSO, GAC, ALAC gathering, as I sent out in my email to the council list last week. And then the CCNSO will meet on Tuesday and Wednesday, Dottie.
Well, no, I just mean for travel purposes. How early do we need to show up?
Saturday.
Saturday, okay.
Yeah. Sorry, Chris, when is that administrative workshop? I thought that was in Sunday.
What administrative workshop?
The one you just described.
I didn't mention administrative. Do you mean the one that Leslie was talking about?
Yes.
I wasn't aware we had a day for that yet.
No.
Leslie, have we?
No.
No. Peter, are you talking? I'm not sure.
Yes, we're talking about the workshop that the participation working group came up with.
Okay.
If that is still taking place, I think we really need the date as soon as possible, since everybody's already starting their planning.
I agree. Was it planned to be a whole day? I mean, I don't think we've got that far with it, but certainly.
My earlier comment was that the participation working group are not organising it.
Yes.
It may well be a recommendation from the participation working group that something be organised in some way.
Right. Okay. I mean, the answer
it
is...
It sounds like it's not happening, right?
Well, no, who knows? We've got half a day clear on the Sunday, Peter, we could use if we needed to.
Okay.
That, I hadn't... To be honest, I just thought we were still waiting to get the recommendation from the participation working group, but perhaps we can work on that the next few days and see what the situation is.
Okay.
So Dottie, basically Saturday to be ready for Sunday, I think.
Okay. It's really good to know that well in advance, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Chris, I have something more.
Yes, Gabby.
Just a question, really, because when I asked for sponsors, so I had one or two CCTLDs coming back to me saying they would love to sponsor another CCNSO dinner. Not lunch. So my question is basically, are we going to do it again this time, or are we going to ask them to sponsor it another time, or what are we doing about that?
Okay. My immediate thought is it's going to be, it will be a really hard thing to do in somewhere like Cairo, I would, but I'm open to anyone being prepared to take it on and run with it and find somewhere. And so on. I mean, I thought it was a great night and everybody enjoyed themselves and it's worth doing. Whether we should be doing it at every meeting is a different question, I think.
Well, I think we should do it as long as we have sponsors.
But the thing is, we have maximum two sponsors for this now, and then I would have to call for sponsors, for more sponsors. So, not that we have the whole dinner covered yet. I don't think so, at least.
Well, I can tell you that the Paris one, and of course Cairo, one imagines, would be cheaper than Paris, but the Paris one was sponsored by, I think, six of us from memory, or seven of us, and in fact, the bill, I'm about to send the bills out to those who said they would sponsor, so I don't think you got away with it, because you haven't. But I think it ended up costing something like €8,000 or €9,000 from memory.
How many people went?
100.
Wow.
But I have to say, it was it was a really, really hard thing to organize. And Olivier, basically, it took someone like Olivier, who was passionate about it and fixated on it, to actually get it done. And I guess we would need to have the same buy-in from our Cairo,
we need a passionate
people
Egyptian
in order to make it work. So, Gabby, I think, because you really do need to have someone on the ground to do it. You can't do it at the last.
Well, we have Nashwa, of course, but I'm not sure how passionate she would be about that. I just generally wanted to know what to reply to these people who want to sponsor it.
My recommendation would be to roll it forward to Mexico.
Okay.
And then get Alex to organise it for us. And Alex and Oscar can do it together.
unless one of those sponsors is also willing to take over the organisation, perhaps.
That's very true. But then we would need at least, I'd suggest we need probably at least five or six sponsors to make it doable. Mm. But who's put their hands up, Gary?
It was Hong Kong and China, as I understand it. Hong Kong clearly said that, no, but both clearly said they would be interested in sponsoring a dinner.
Mm. Okay. Well, I guess we could go back to them and say, you need to be prepared to take the running of actually doing it and see what they say.
Well, if this venue is the number one business venue in the world, and, you know...
Is it?
That's what they were advertising, voted the number one. It should be prepared to have large dinners without...
Oh, you mean actually do it in the hotel?
Well, do it in some fashion, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't have to be...
Well, why don't we explore it a little bit further? Gabby,
don't say no yet.
Why don't you and I send an email to Jonathan and Jan and see if we can get some traction?
And yeah.
I mean, my main concern would be that it's almost impossible to get anywhere in Cairo in less than about an hour and a half. So if we were to stay where we are, that would be fine. But
well, that where we are is not just a hotel. It's got shops and everything else, so according to its representation.
The gala, apparently, the hair tells me that the gala event is going to be at the pyramids.
Oh, really?
Yeah, intense, apparently.
Wow.
But they're currently working on trying to get some kind of traffic management system in place to reduce the journey time from an hour and a half to about 40 minutes.
Uh-huh.
So we'll see. Okay, anything else before we close the call off? Brilliant. Thank you very much indeed, everybody. And Gabby, you'll get the minutes and action items out.
Yes, hooray.
Hooray. Thank you very much. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Hooray.
Thank you.
Bye.